We are in Exodus chapter 33.
The Lord said to Moshe, "Depart, go up from here, and you and the people whom you have brought up out of the land of Mitzrayim, to the land which I swore to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob, saying, 'To your offspring I will give it.' I will send an angel before you and drive out the Canaanites, the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Go up to a land flowing with milk and honey, but I will not go up among you, lest I consume you on the way, for you are a stiff-necked people." When the people heard this disastrous word, they mourned, and no one put on his ornaments. For the Lord had said to Moshe, "Say to the people of Israel, 'You are a stiff-necked people. If for a single moment I should go up among you, I would consume you. So now take off your ornaments, that I may know what to do with you.' Therefore the people of Israel stripped themselves of their ornaments from Mount Horeb onward." Now Moshe used to take up the tent and pitch it outside the camp, far off from the camp, and he called it the Tent of Meeting. And everyone who had sought the Lord would go out to the Tent of Meeting, which was outside the camp. Whenever Moshe went out to the tent, all the people would rise up, and each would stand at his tent door and watch Moshe until he had gone into the tent. When Moshe entered the tent, the pillar of cloud would descend and stand at the entrance of the tent, and the Lord would speak with Moshe. And when all the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the entrance of the tent, all the people would rise up and worship, each at his tent door. And the Lord used to speak to Moshe face to face as a man speaks to his friend. When Moshe turned again into the camp, his assistant, Yehoshua, the son of Nun, a young man, would not depart from the tent. Moshe said to the Lord, "See, you say to me, 'Bring up this people,' but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. Yet you have said, 'I know you by name, and you also have found favor in my sight.' Now therefore, if I have found favor in your sight, please show me now your ways, that I may know you in order to find favor in your sight. Consider too that this nation is your people." And he said, "My presence will go up with you, and I will give you rest." And he said to him, "If your presence will not go with me, do not bring us up from here. For how shall it be known that I have found favor in your sight, I and your people? Is it not in your going with us, so that we are distinct, I and your people, from every other people on the face of the earth?" And the Lord said to Moshe, "This very thing that you have spoken I will do, for you have found favor in my sight, and I know you by name." Moshe said, "Please show me your glory." And he said, "I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will proclaim before you my name, the Lord. And I will be gracious to you, to whom I will be gracious, and I will show mercy on whom I will show mercy." But he said, "You cannot see my face, for man shall not see me and live." The Lord said, "Behold, there is a place by me where you shall stand on the rock. And while my glory passes by, I will put you in the cleft of the rock, and I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will take away my hand, and you shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen."
Any thoughts? Opinions?
Well, I think what is absolutely stupendously wonderful is the fact that in John 17:24, Christ said, "Father, I will that they also whom thou hast given me be with me where I am, that they may behold my glory which thou hast given me." So the New Testament church, and as with all of us, get to see the glory of God. In a spiritual sense, we get to see the glory of God where they did not get to see because of their disobedience. So Christ not only brought forgiveness, but he also brought the glory of God with him. He brought a covering so that we could approach the throne of God under his covering and know God's glory. It's an awesome, wonderful thing to be able to go into the Holy of Holies and to go before the throne of God and be able to be on our knees and pray before God under the covering of Christ. That is so incredibly awesome.
In one verse it says that he spoke to Moses face to face, and then when they're on the mountain he said, no man can see my face and live. So explain, please.
I will. That actually comes later. He told two people, I speak to Moses face to face. And that was his sister and his brother. He said that too. Okay, go ahead. He had one.
Years ago, when I read this chapter, people were standing by their tent while Moses went in.
Yes.
So I was saying, I want to know, since they knew where the tent was in the center of the camp, I wanted to know who was on the north, the south, and the east, and the west.
Okay, we'll explain that.
Yeah, well, I have it written down.
Oh, you have it written down?
Yeah, a long time ago. And I wrote down when they departed, when first and second.
Right, numbers.
So when you put all that together, then you realize the dynamics going on between Yahweh and Moses. It's a pretty dynamic segment.
Okay. Anybody have a comment about that? I will make a comment about that, yes. Oh, one way over there.
He calls Moses his friend. And then Yeshua said, you're no longer my servants. You are my friend.
Oh, yes. So to his apostles. Yes. Yes. Well, that's how God is.
Yeah.
However, God is God, and friendship should be respected. We should respect him first, and he respects us second. That's the way it is. Any more? One more over here.
I love how Moses was seeking him, and Heavenly Father just made friends with him, dialogue with him. And that's all I wanted to say was I love that interaction with his Father.
All right. We're going to backtrack a little bit to chapter 32. Of course, it has to do with, quote, the golden calf, right? And Moses came down and he destroyed the tablets. Remember? The two tablets are written on both sides. Okay? They're good-sized tablets in order to fit inside that Ark of the Covenant. But there was an interesting thing that God told Moses to do. Do you remember what he said to do about Moses' tent? Moses had his own tent. What did God tell him to do? That's back in 32. Take your camp outside of the camp. God departed from them. A symbolism of him departing himself from them. We say, what? God would never leave. Yes, he does. He left Shiloh. And technically, he left Jerusalem. He left. When things are not according to his will, what does he do? Stay there? Or endure it? No, he just leaves. If God is a, quote, a gentleman, if you don't like him, he goes. All right, so it's a very simple thing. Now, when we look at this thing, remember I told you what the tent of meeting means? You remember what it says in Hebrew? What? It's a what?
Habitation.
Habitation, okay. Word meeting comes from the Hebrew word of moed. So it's a tabernacle of appointments. When God created, had this tabernacle built for himself first. It was to be designated not only where he dwells, but where the appointments are going to be appointed. And so when appointment, no one could be appointed anytime they want, any place they want. They had to go to what's called the tent of appointments. And we have that tent of meetings. It's the tent of appointments. God's going to have a time for someone to come, and it's appointed time to give them appointed assignment. It happened to Aaron. It happened to Moses. It happened to even Joshua, we'll see. When they come to this tent of appointments. Now, if you were called to God and given to his tent appointments, would you show up? Yeah. If he says, I don't want you to show up, would you show up? No. You wouldn't dare show up. And so we hear in chapter 30, back to 32 for just a half a second. Moses here in chapter 32, he makes a statement, and he turned to Aaron in verse 21. What do these people, how did these people actually do and made you do what you did, this great sin of building this calf that just kind of popped up out of nowhere? We went through the details of what that word means, what the calf represents, and what it stands for. And sometimes it's hard to look at that. But nonetheless. And so he said, well, they asked us to make Elohim, verse 24. I know awful lot of translations use the word gods, plurality. In Hebrew, it's not. It's the same word of Elohim as it is in chapter 1. And it says Elohim. And we went through an explanation of what that word means, what it talks about, and the meaning of that specific terminology. Don't need to go through that again. Most of you already know that. And so he says, well, they wanted this. And for Moses, this man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what became of him. Remember, we talked about this earlier. And that's not saying, oh, I don't know where he's at. The Hebrew phrase, we don't care what happened to him. We want you, Aaron, to lead us. We talked about this last week, right? Why would they want Aaron to lead them? Do you remember why? Because of what?
Because they could manipulate him. They thought Moses abandoned them or left or didn't know he was coming back.
Because they saw Aaron whenever it
first happened. There was only two men who had rods that did power. One was Moses and the other was Aaron. You don't mess around with these guys. Aaron was respected and honored. And we look at as Aaron being a weak, feeble man that had no guts whatsoever. He was feared. But the thing with Moses was feared more. Now, as we go on with this thing, we read farther in the Tanakh, we're going to find something heroically brave about this Aaron who seems to be a coward. What did he do to save people's lives that could take his? Do you remember what it was? Remember that plague? And he took the incense. He ran right into the middle of death. And death stopped. Man, talk about a man who had enough guts. So when I look at Aaron, I look at him with honor and respect, because God looks at Aaron with honor and respect. It was not a mistake by God to call Aaron to always to, always to, always to. Obviously, we look back, because we are flesh and blood human beings. We see the weakness of Aaron and the strength of Moses. But we seem to forget Moses had no strength. Remember the burning bush? Plus, would you call him a coward? Yeah, he was. He was afraid, terrified, didn't want to do it. Send somebody else. He had to learn to be brave. He had to learn to go through hardships. At this particular point, it's very interesting that after the golden calf was destroyed and made the people eat water, the gold, it was actually gold mixed with something else, because gold itself by itself cannot be crushed down into fine powder, but it's mixed with something else, it will stay firm. Your golden ring, if you have one, that's not pure gold. It wouldn't stay there if it was pure gold. You have to mix with another metal in order for it to be strong. And so, your metal ring can be crushed into fine powder because it's mixed with another metal in order for it to be firm. And then we talked about this thing last week about all the sons of Levi gathered themselves unto Moses, right? Chapter 32. And how many people died?
3,000.
Yeah. Not everybody in Israel did it. Just 3,000. 500 or 3,000. Somewhere in that vicinity. Excuse me. Now we talked about, I have to lead up to this point because the next chapter, 34, talks about another set of 40 days. Remember I told you how important 40 days are? There's a testing point. And each, God seemed to test, I think every human being now, my personal opinion, for 40 days of trial. 40 days of no answer. 40 days of nothing's going to happen. Well, do you trust me? Do you trust me? Do you trust me? Happened to Messiah, right? For 40 days, no communication. And his answer was, it is written, it is written, it is written. He based upon what was God had already told him. And he lived his life based upon trusting his Father. Now we think, oh, here's a piece of cake for him. No, the man was going to die if he didn't get anything to eat. And 40 days of time of trial. Do you think it happened to Noah?
Yeah,
okay. And here, Moses up there for 40 days, the first time. Who was the test on?
The people,
not Moses. And the people lost the test. They did not endure. Because the very day of the 40th day when Moses had to come down, that's when he also had to destroy the calf. So we talked. I'm sorry, what?
Well,
that's the second time. That happened the second time. The second time he had to wait for the Shabbat. First time it was the day of Shavuot. All right, now let's go on. But he said something very interesting. Let's go back here for just a minute. Chapter 32, verse 31. This is a very interesting statement. The man of God said, and Moses turned to Yahweh and said, all these people have committed a great sin. He's talking to the God and have made for themselves an Elohim of gold. Yet, if you will forgive their sin, but if you're not, I'm making a request. Blot me out of life. That is a big statement for a man, isn't it? Ready to lay his life down for all of the people of Israel who transgress God's word saying, don't make an image of me. And they did. He's ready to lay his life down that they may have life. You got that? That's awesome. That's why Moses is such a fantastic person, I would say. That's why Revelation says it's a song of Moses first gets sung, and then the song of the Lamb comes second. It's not the other way around. So you find that interesting. And of course, this is the answer. Whoever has sinned against me, I will blot them out of my book. Now, therefore, go and lead the people. Nevertheless, I'm going to visit their punishment. And I'm going to punish them. Now, we think it's horrible, death, misery. Remember, death is a minor thing with God. He can kill and bring you back to life again. That's what he said, right? I can kill you and bring you back to life again. When he kills you and brings you back to life again, what are you going to do? Pay attention. Wow. I better listen more closely to this, right? Now back to 33. Work up back to chapter 33. This is a very interesting approach. With this little bit of background to us, then Yahweh spoke unto Moses. He said something. Depart and go from here, you and the people whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt, to the land which I swore unto Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You remember what was he said to Moses at the very beginning? I am now going to establish the covenant I made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. 400 years when he made that statement, 400 years he starts to institute it. That's what he told Abraham, remember? So the land was not given to Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob. It was to be given to, 400 years later, the people who had long since did not know that much about God. I'll visit the iniquities to the third and fourth generation, remember? You know, in our life, in our flesh and blood life, do you remember the iniquities of your mom and dad? Now, just listen. Don't ask the question. Just let's just say. Now, do you remember the iniquities of your grandfather and your grandmother? Now, do you remember the iniquities of your great-grandfather and your great-grandmother? Most of you probably don't even remember seeing one. Have no idea who they are. How about the great-great-grandmother, great-great-grandmother? They're dead. Who cares? You don't remember them, right? So it's raised only up to the third and fourth generation, if the one is of that long, then it's going to be continued. But however, then we're not talking about transgressions here. We're talking about what God says, in the fourth generation, I will pull them out. The ironicness of the fourth generation here, by the way, the Hebrew word generation doesn't mean flesh, to flesh, to flesh, to flesh. It's like the Greek word, I can't think of right off what it means, but it means from this age to this age to this age to this age, or from this time to this time to this time and to this time. They could have a lot of children in between those times. Remember, God counts time according to how he counts time, not according to how we count time. Right? Because we would look at this and say, man, 400 years and they're finally answering him? What kind of God are you? And our attitude, our thinking, because we're flesh and blood. We don't see the time, because God's outside of time, right? He created time, but he has power over time. He can stop it, right? I mean, didn't he stop it for what, a half a day or something like that? What's his name? I guess right up somewhere in the book of Acts. I mean,
I know what you're talking.
Yeah. And he could back it up, like he did in Hezekiah's time. He had the power to stop time, to alter it. And he had the power to, by the way, to reverse it. There is a scripture which I did not pick up today. It's in the prophets. I think it's in Isaiah. It says he can change the Moedim at his will. And he says, I will change the Moedim. What? 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 Your word? Yeah, his word. Since he created it, he can do anything he wants to do with it. Correct? He doesn't have to follow the rules of mankind. Mankind has to follow the rules of him. Now, that seems unfair. Well, of course, God's always unfair to flesh and blood, right? Let's go on down. Now he says, I will, verse 3. Send my angel before you, verse 2 rather, and I will drive out the Canaanite and the Amorite and the Hittite and the Perizzite and well, you know the other guys. and give them the land of milk and honey. That's a promise, right? Golden promise, right? Wonderful. But I'm not going to be there. I'm not going with you. Why? They made an image of me out of gold. I said, don't you do that. In heaven, on earth, or in the waters of the earth, don't make an image. But we as human beings, since we have to see things with our eyes, it satisfies our eyes. We hear things with our ears, It satisfies their ears. We eat things to our mouth because it satisfies our mouth, our flesh. And when it affects our understanding and knowledge, it puffs up our wisdom. Pride builds fast and quick. Just about it in everybody, right? Of course, maybe I'm the only one guilty of that. Anyway, and he said now, I will not go up. Why? Because you, meaning the people of Israel, are self-willed people or stiff-necked people. Now, I try to explain the word stiff-necked. You know what happens when you have a stiff neck? Have you ever, anybody ever had a stiff neck? Can't move it. You can't move it left or right. You can't move it. It's stiff. Well, on a spiritual point, you won't even bow your head to God. That neck does not refer to just this in Hebrew. It's the neck all the way down to the backbone. Will you bow? And of course we know, in the United States of America, we never bow before anybody, right? It's against the law. I'm being funny. I hope you understand that. But it's hard for us to give honor to someone who should be honored. Even if we don't like them, we don't like to give them honor. So we don't bow down. We shake our hand maybe, or don't shake a hand at all. Have nothing to do with them. They may have power, boss, rulership over you, but let's just get away from them. Because that's the way human beings are, not just America, but human beings are. They don't like being told what to do. They're stiff-necked. They're self-willed. Or maybe not all of us are, huh? Just a few of us in this room. Maybe one or two. Anyway. Anyway, so we have this happening. The next day, he says something took place. And verse 35, and Yahweh said unto Moses, say to the children of Israel, you are a stiff-necked people. You're a self-willed people. I will come up to your midst in the moment and consume you. Wow. Would you think there'd be something to be afraid of?
Yeah, I'd be
terrified. But he didn't do it, did he? Anyway. Now therefore, take off your ornaments, that I may know what to do to you. What are ornaments?
Jewelry.
What else? Don't get dressed up. I don't want to see your covering of how great you think you are. I want you to be look boring. Then I'll figure out what I'm going to do with you. And we read in this chapter, that's exactly what they did. No fancy clothes, not the most purple dress, not the gorgeous gown, not this wonderful thing wrapped around me. Straight. Nothing else. Just stay there and come by and figure out what to do with you. Yes?
Do you think that would represent like a humility?
Yes. And if they didn't do it willingly, they would be in trouble. But they did willingly. Why? Why? They heard God was not going to be with them. God was so angry with them because of that image that they made of him in the form of a golden calf. That just made him a little bit upset. He'll send an angel. You know this angel he's supposed to send? He warned him, by the way, whatever you do, don't make him mad. Because if you do, he showed no mercy. He's just going to let you have it. You mean an angel would just do that? That's what God said. They'll do it. He'll carry out my will. Therefore, listen to me. Because he'll carry out my will. No angels got their own will. They're under the power and will of the Creator of heaven and earth. They don't do anything without his will. And he says now, Moses took his tent. This is verse 7 now. Verse 33, verse 7. Now, all of a sudden the words change almost oddly. But listen very carefully to this one. And Moses took his tent and pitched it outside of the camp, far from the camp, and it is called the Tabernacle of Appointments. So now Moses is dead, even though the tabernacle has been built yet. Now Moses' tabernacle becomes the Tabernacle of Appointments, which was, that's God's dwelling place in the previous chapter. About this is my tent of appointments. This is where I'm going to dwell. When someone wants to talk to me, they can come here. And it's supposed to be in the middle of it. In the midst of it, yes.
Is this the tent that had the furniture and all the stuff we talked about?
No, it had not been made yet. He just came down from the mountain and gave the assignments to those two men we talked about. And in verse 30, chapter 36, there's a lot more that worked with these two men. But God said, I gave them the wisdom to build this stuff, to make the gold, to make the silver, to make all the things I want. I gave them the ability to do this, and they are the overseer to do make sure it's done right. But that would not have been done. It took a year. Well, almost a year. From this point in time, when he came down after the mountain on the 40th day, and he gave all the information to these two men about the tabernacle and how it was to be built. God told him, I want that man, I want that man. Who they are, that's who they are. You go tell them what their assignment is. And so therefore, Moses went to them and told them exactly what God wants them to do. Now from that moment on, all the way until the second year, beginning the second year, that tabernacle was being built. We end the book of Exodus here. We'll find out what Moses was responsible for. Moses himself, the man Moses, not the people. Because Moses is a picture of somebody. Yes, he was one responsible to anoint the priesthood. Not the priesthood anointing the priesthood. Yeah. Moses is responsible for doing it. He had to do it according to what's required. 7 days, remember? And the sacrifices were 7 days, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, or one at 4 o'clock, 8, 9 o'clock, one at 3 o'clock. Over and over again for each one of the sons, or I said for the sons of Aaron. Yes? I'm sorry, what?
When you said tabernacle, I was thinking about
keep a tab. Keep a tab. Okay. And it came to pass that anyone who sought, this is not just then, it was after even the 40 years of wilderness they were in, the 40 years. If they wanted to talk and make communications with Yahweh or the Lord, they had to do this. They had, who sought Yahweh, went outside of the meeting of appointments, which was outside of the camp. They themselves would have to go outside of their world and head toward the tabernacle of appointments. Who do you think they talked to? Moses. That's who they talked to. So what role was Moses playing here?
Mediator.
Huh?
Mediator.
Yes?
A judge.
A judge, okay. That's a good word.
They would come to him with issues, problems. And like as it turned out, as the time went on, the King David, people would come and he would make the decisions. And
yeah, but we're going before the king. That's great. But here, Moses, they couldn't go before the Lord himself. They had to go before Moses to do it. Yes? Because this is, no, wait, keep this clear. Moses' tent was not the dwelling place of God. Not the dwelling place of Yahweh. But if they wanted to find out something from Yahweh, they had to go to Moses' tent. All right? The two different tents here we're talking about. The first one was his dwelling place, God's dwelling place, and that was called the Tabernacle of Meeting. Now all of a sudden it's not there. Now we're taking Moses' place. He and his house is the house forbidden. Yes?
Says in Genesis that he would be as God.
Yeah. First part of Exodus, yes. I'll make you as God. Wow, make you as Elohim. Make you as me. Because Aaron is a representation of the Son of God. Who's Moses the representation of? God himself. Just a picture. God himself doing his job, and Aaron represents the high priest, or I would say represents on a, listen carefully. I said this before, something that's hard to understand. But the Levitical priesthood is a shadow of, or a picture of, the Melchizedek priesthood. It wasn't to be, to remain anything else than a shadow. What happens when the real king or the real priest comes? So when we look at the functions of the high priest, no matter what time in history, it's the function, if it's done according to the will of God, it's according to the pattern that Moses was shown up upon the mountain to make it exactly like you have seen it, including the Day of Atonement. Including an incredible thing called the Golden Altar. And most people have a hard time understanding what all this stuff means, but I think most of you now do. Where are we at now? I lost my place. Okay, it's pictures of Elohim not dwelling with the people because now he's outside of dwelling. Remember that he wanted the thing built in the midst of them or in the middle of them? And he says, you are self-willed, I'm out of here. And he left. All right? A picture, symbolically, of what's taking place. How do you get back in? How do you get back in? How can you become, to be able to be in the dwelling place of the Creator of heaven and earth?
You have your self-will and seek His.
Somebody had to pay a price. Now, the picture of the high priest, the Day of Atonement, is to have to pay a price. And the book of Hebrews tells you what the price was. Just as Moses said, blot me out of life, that they may have life. The Son of God came down and blotted out of life, that we may have life. Do you understand that? He really was killed. His life really was taken. His death really truly happened. It's not a false picture. It's a picture of truth, of great understanding. And the mighty power of his Father brought him back to life. That's hope for us and for all mankind. Yes?
Isn't that the same as when we were in the garden and we did our own thing and we got kicked out? He wouldn't let us back in.
We got kicked out of the dwelling place of God. I mean, the Garden of Eden, dwelling place of God, and we got kicked out. Okay, I got to understand the state. Anyway, verse 11 is very fascinating. That one man was allowed to be in that tent of appointments other than Moses. Who was it? Joshua. Now that's not his real name. That's the name Moses gave him. It's a very fascinating name, isn't it? It's like the name of Yahshua, in a way. Now, see, here's Moses, picturing of himself as being like God. Now we have another man who seems to be very gentle, knows how to make war. He didn't know how to make war. He had to fight in a war. He was told to do so. But he couldn't win the war if Moses wasn't holding up the rod, right? And so it's the power of God giving the strength to Joshua in order that he'd fight. In the book of Joshua, by the way, we won't go there today. He, God said to Joshua, I'm going to make you as respectable and as honored and as glorified as Moses was. And we'll go any farther with that one. It's a picture. Right. because Moses was still a man. He made mistakes as a human being. We're just looking at the picture. We're looking at the picture. Not every picture is an exact picture. It's just a picture of how God's going to work. And Moses couldn't enter in because he blew it. I mean, he hit the rock and he took credit for putting the rock open with water around here. Oh, and God says, you didn't glorify me. You're out. Yeah, it's a type, you know. So, did Moses have weakness? Of course he did. He's flesh and blood, like you and I are. I made a lot of mistakes in my, quote, leadership, end of quote. I'll probably keep on making a lot of mistakes in my, quote, leadership, end of quote, whatever that means. Yes.
God created him to do a certain purpose.
That's correct.
And so I think we get that mixed up, is that when we look at these ones, okay, well, that was his purpose. So we all have a purpose, regardless of how we feel it's very small in comparison to Moses. We still, our purpose is, you know, he doesn't respect, he's not a respecter of man. So we're all there.
And the very name Moses is what? One who's been drawn out. Talk about a man who's been drawn out. He's been drawn out completely every day in his life. And he didn't know it. He had no idea. At 80 years old, he didn't want to be going there. But he was drawn out. You fulfill my will, Moses. And Moses kind of stumbled and stammered, and so I can't speak. Because, I'll bring Aaron in here. He's a good speaker. He knows how to speak for you. So there's a spokesman. Oh, there is a word. Guy's going to speak the words of Moses. See a picture there?
Yeah.
Big picture, yes.
Do you think that it is also a plan that errors occur? Do you think it's also a plan that he did the rock and that, you know, all the whole nine yards? Every time he made a mistake was like, you know, oh.
It wasn't meant to work in the flesh. In the very beginning, it wasn't meant to work in the flesh. It does. Apostle Paul says the word of God, the spirit of God, the oracles of God are spiritual, meant for the spirit world, not angelic world. And there's a difference because flesh and blood cannot do this. And he himself found himself weak. And he used the last commandment, Ten Commandments, to prove how weak he was. Yes.
Okay. So before sin entered the world, the Adam and Eve were like in a spiritual place and not...
They were in the Garden of Eden. They were in the home and the dwelling place where the Lord God, Elohim, would come. And at a point in time, they'd always show up. And when they didn't show up on that appointed time, he said, no, we have to, where are you, Adam? That's exactly not what it says in Hebrew.
Was that a Moedim?
Why are you not here, Adam?
Oh.
The different phrase in Hebrew. And we say, why, where are you? No, why are you not here? He said the very same to Cain when he said, where is your brother? Why is he not here? Well, I killed him. Well, that was his answer. He said, I don't know. Somebody else's responsibility, not mine. Well, you know. But flesh and blood, Apostle Paul says this in Romans, I don't exactly, maybe Jeff could pick it up, that I created you in emptiness. I created you with no value whatsoever. I created you in vanity, emptiness. But I also created you in hope. Now, we don't look at ourselves as being created in vanity. I'm sorry, what happens to your flesh? It goes away. What is supposed to remain? Hope. Hope. Hope in what? Hope in life. That you will receive, and it's called the crown of life. One of these days I'll explain that Greek word, crown. It's not the crown of a king. It's not the crown of a leader. It's your crown. And that crown is life. And that crown goes around your head. Life is with you. It's not a crown of authority, because that's not what the Greek word is when they use the word crown. And when they use this thorn thing around the Messiah, it was a blasphemous thing, if I could say, of someone receiving a crown, not of kingship, because a conqueror would receive a crown if he fulfilled his commandment and did it. He received a crown, not a crown of a king, not a crown of authority, a crown of authority, no. He gets the honor to wear one because he did it. In the Olympics, you remember that when it started out? I know, they were all naked, we know that. But anyway, when they won, they got a crown around their head. Julius Caesar had a crown around his head. It wasn't thorns and thistles. It wasn't a horn. Horn is more closer to the word crown than the word crown is, if I could use that terminology. But you may have to look that up yourself. I got to get this finished. Anyway, let's drop down here. And Moses, verse 12 here, said to Yahweh, or Yahuwah, however you want to pronounce that, "See, you have said to me, bring this people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. Yet, you have said," he's quoting God here, "I know your name, and you have also found grace in my sight." Oh, okay. Now, see, Moses is still talking here. Bad things just happened. The tablets were broken. The plague came. People got killed. God says, "I'm out of here. I'm not going to go with you. You're on your own." That's why he says, "These are your people, Moses. They're not mine. They're yours." The stiff-necked, self-willed people, they're yours. They're not mine. I don't want anything to do with them. That's pretty harsh, strong words, isn't it? Now, I know some of you mothers and fathers never said that to your child. You're always kind, generous, and no matter what they did, that was it. You're always with them. I never had to punish them. Anyway, he goes on here, and it says, "Therefore," verse 13, "I pray," I'm requesting you, basically. My supplication is that if I have found grace in your sight, show me now your way. Moses, you think by now he'd know the way? No. He didn't know the way. "That I may know you, that I may find grace in your sight." I don't know who you are. Now, it seems strange for a man that just led out, quote, all of Israel into this place, and they got the Ten Commandments. He's up there for 40 days and 40 nights. Now he's come down here. He breaks the tablets, and God says, "It's your people, not my people." And he says, "I'm not going to go with them. You take them to the land that I promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I'm not going to go with you. I'll send an angel with you, but I'm not going to go with you." Pretty stern words, right? And he says, "I don't know you. Consider the nation. These are your people." Now he's reversing the back. Says, "Wait a minute. These are yours. They're not mine. Yes, they're stiff-necked. And I came and I said, I want my life being taken that they may have life." And God says, "Nah, that ain't going to happen. You're not the one, Moses." And so he said, verse 14, "My presence will go with you, Moses, and I will give you, Moses, rest." You see, if your presence does not go with us, do not bring us up from here. Don't lead us anymore. Don't take us anywhere. That seems harsh, right? Why would you challenge God for this? For us to understand something about God. See, the book of Torah is about God, not about people. It's about the mind of God, not the mind of people. It's about the will of God, not the will of people. And we always think we have to, quote, follow and see what these men do, that we'll have an example to follow these men. No! The example is, live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of Elohim. Not the mouth of people, but of Elohim. And we, that was quoted by Moses, first said that, and the Messiah repeated it. Do we get to pick and choose which word we want, which word we don't want? Not according to Moses, and not according to the Messiah. All right. Now, he says, now if I found grace, what do I expect from you? What do you expect from us? He said, you have found grace in me, and you'll be with me. But they're your nation. They're your people. Your promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They're your people. You promised Abraham. You promised Isaac. You promised Jacob. Now, what is that for? Let us know that God forgot? I don't think so. I think it's for us to realize, yeah, God can cast out, but he will fulfill his will, no matter how angry we make him. Now, it doesn't mean we're going to get away scot-free. I use that word scot. I hate that word phrase. I should never use that word. He says, I will punish those I will punish. No, I will punish those I will punish who sinned against me. That's what he said to Moses first. After Moses said, I want my life, take my life. He says, no, I'm going to punish those who sinned against me. And his punishment is not give him a headache. All right, let's continue on. And then Yahweh said unto Moses, verse 17, I'm almost finished. I will also do this thing that you have spoken, for you have found grace in my sight, and I know you by name. Now, how many times have you said that now? What is Moses' name? I mean, he doesn't know anybody else's name. Why is his name so important? Why is it that he has to say this for? Why didn't he say that to Abraham? He didn't. Why didn't he say that to Jacob? He didn't. Why didn't he say that to Isaac? He didn't. Moses. Why Moses?
Because he was called for this.
I'm sorry, what?
Because he was set apart for this work.
Yes. I know your name. That means I appointed you, your name, and you I know, and you're going to fulfill your name. And Moses' name is still being fulfilled today in your life and in my life. You ever thought about that before? Moses is not an old man that had no value. He is one of the most important men, if I almost want to say, the most important man that ever walked the face of the earth. Amazing, right? He says, I will make your goodness. Of course, he says, please show me your glory. Now, let's talk about glory. We'll not talk about that today. And he said, I will make all my goodness pass before you. I will make some of my, a tiny section of my goodness. No, all of it. Goodness. He didn't say, I will show you my anger. I'll show you my hatred. I'll show you my resentment. I'll show you my bitterness. No, I'm going to show you my goodness, which shows up in chapter 34.